Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Thank you, everyone, for coming. So tomorrow starts the filing window for the look back under the Child Victims Act. And honestly, this is a issue that's close to my heart, and it means a lot more so to those who have survived and endured childhood sexual abuse. Historically, when we think of in the context of childhood sexual abuse, we think of church cases. Those have predominantly been those cases that have been covered by the media and those cases that have been on the tip of our tongue. But honestly, with the window coming and opening, we're starting to really see how many of these cases are even closer to our doorstep. So tomorrow is just the first day in a long year of filing these cases. And we have clients who are filing who are 24, who are the youngest possible under the window, and we have clients as old as 93. So these are people who have really been anxiously awaiting their moment to talk about exactly what happened to them. And truth be told, they've waited too long. But starting tomorrow, we're filing the first of the cases. We're going to be filing two here in Buffalo, in Erie County, as well as numerous cases throughout Western New York. Now, I think another important thing that's really going to come to light as people are able to tell their stories is that we're going to see the effects that this trauma has later on in life. Historically, you had to bring the cases by the time you turned 23. For most victims, for most people who've endured this, the effects aren't even realized at 23. Most people can't even talk about what happened to them at 23. For many of our clients, they didn't start to realize the true effects of this until their 30s and into the middle age. The majority of our clients are between the ages of 40 and 60. And are honestly struggling with things that happened to them as young as 5 years old. We're going to learn the toll that post-traumatic stress can take on someone. We're going to learn substance abuse, psychological effects, how it's affected their families, their ability to have relationships, marriages. Just because something happens when you're young doesn't mean that the effects go unnoticed. And truth be told, this is the youngest and most vulnerable that our community has. And for far too long, people have been able to prey on our most vulnerable members of society. So hopefully tomorrow starts a new culture of openness where we can talk about things that have bothered us. Any questions?
How many are going to target the diocese and how many will target other institutions and organizations?
Sure. So as a whole, so right now we have about 1,300 cases that have been vetted. And of those 1,300, I would say roughly 200 of them are against dioceses all over the state. So for here in Erie County, there's also a number of schools, both private and public. We have a number of individual cases, family members, neighbors. We also have a considerable number of foster care cases. So individuals who've been in and out of the foster care system, abused by one foster care family after another. And we also have several Boy Scout cases here in Erie County, And then also a number of professional relationships. So people who have been either counselors for a nonprofit or camp counselors or physicians, nurses, even many former employers for a lot of 16 and 17 year olds who first entered the workforce.
Given the number of students, you chose the Catholic Center as your background. Why not the Boy Scouts? Why not students? Why did you want to acquire them here?
So the reason we chose to focus here is because, honestly, it was amongst the Catholic Church that everyone really first felt comfortable talking about children who have been victimized. This is where it all came to light. And the truth of the matter is that it is still a large portion of the cases that we're seeing come in front of us, our church cases. And obviously this is going to become clearer over the next month, but what we know about predators who prey after children is that they're not one-time offenders. It's a course of conduct. It's a behavioral lifestyle. And honestly, they're hunters. And the truth of the matter is that amongst the Catholic Church, that has long been a safe haven and a hunting ground for a lot of these predators. So that is why it's still a significant portion of the cases, and I think also why it's an important cornerstone to the cases that we're bringing.
Now, that's what we've been hearing for 15, maybe going on 20 mm-hmm. years now, and yet that's actually a minority of the cases you're bringing now. Are you getting away from what we have so long considered the usual suspects?
I think that our notion of what the usual suspects are just has to broaden. I think we're used to seeing the Catholic Church as the usual suspects because they were just the most publicized suspects. But the reason that they were so successful at committing these atrocities was because they had a calculus that we see across all of these cases. Trust, responsibility for minors, access to minors. And an institution that either is turning a blind eye or willing to hide it or overlook indiscretions. And we're going to see that across a number of different institutions. Some run by the city, some run by the state, some private, even families on a much smaller level.
Do you see more governmental entities involved in this?
I wouldn't say that it's not necessarily more. It's these predators are evenly distributed across all of these entities. Wherever there was access, they found a way to infiltrate it. So school teachers, very common. Doesn't matter if it's private or public. If there was a opportunity, they took advantage. For example, camp counselors. Some of them were publicly run camps. Some of them were private. But I don't think that we can honestly say there's any one entity that's more responsible than the other. I think that the truth of the matter is that all of these entities were negligent in seeing what was in front of them.
In terms of the diocese of cases that you have, there's been some public discussion about the possibility that they could file for bankruptcy. Could you explain how that might complicate your ability to be able to seek justice in these particular cases?
So we've seen that happen in other jurisdictions where obviously a look-back window had opened up. A lot of corporate restructuring. But the truth of the matter is that ultimately all of the cases, it didn't hurt the cases, it just extended the time frame. Basically, if an entity files for bankruptcy, it just takes longer. Which is unfortunate given that many of these victims have waited so long as it is.
In what way does it take longer? Why not?
So, and granted, I'm not a bankruptcy attorney, but under bankruptcy, there is a trustee who's put in charge of all the existing assets. And basically, whatever debtors exist or whatever entities argue claim to those existing assets, there has to be litigated. So every dollar has to be litigated as to who it belongs to. So any funds that they would have set aside for either settlement or judgment now has a number of other parties that are claiming the right to the same finance. Sure. So of the Rochester region, actually the majority of the cases are out of the foster care system. We have a number of diocesan cases as well. And then also Rochester is home to many residential schooling situations for children with disabilities. So we have a number of cases that stem out of that structure of Rochester itself.
Can you give a rundown, a rough one even, of what we're talking about in terms of, I believe it was 67 cases, what are we looking at the percentage of foster healthcare?
So with regard to healthcare and related professionals, I'd say it's probably about 20% of the cases. For foster care, I'd say it's probably another 20%, with probably the remaining 60% being mixed between individuals, so that being family members or neighbors or private citizens, as well as diocesan cases, which are actually fairly smaller, and at least out of our caseload in the Rochester region. Church percentage ones, I'd say probably equals to about 10-15% of those cases.
You know, we've heard a lot about Boy Scouts and the diocese. Are there other big names that are in these lawsuits that might be a surprise to people?
For me, the most surprising was our school system. That's what got me at the end of the day, was as parents, people trust their children all day long to a facility that's supposed to have their best interest at heart. And to find not only predators, but repeat predators at normal suburban public schools. I went to public school, normal schools by me. That, for me at least, was the most surprising and the hardest pill to swallow. So we're not filing 100 tomorrow. So the cases that we're filing tomorrow, we're filing 10 tomorrow, and then they'll be rolling throughout the rest of the week and throughout the rest of the month. The reason for that is to stagger the deadlines for the individual cases. If they were to all be filed together, all discovery, all case conferences would all fall on the same date. And since we wanted to represent the entire state of New York, we felt it best to stagger them so that we can do the best on each individual case. Prioritize isn't necessarily the right word. A lot of the cases that we're filing tomorrow are some of our earliest clients retained. So just by nature of the investigation, those investigations were the furthest along.
What is the time frame for some of these instances? This would be for Western New York, Finger Lakes, or any of them. How far back are we looking here?
So how far back? Our oldest retained client to date is 93 years old. He was abused at the age of 10 years old. So figure that is 80 some odd years ago.
Where was that? What was the circumstances?
So actually it was a Western Union representative at the time. And so that's why it's still a viable case, even though the perpetrator is deceased. And that was from a smaller town. I don't remember the exact name of the town.
10 cases you're filing here, all in your county.
So the way we divided it up is because we wanted to equally represent the entire state, is that we have two that we're filing in Erie County, we have two that we're filing in New York City, and then we have the rest spread out, one per county, all across the rest of the state. To tomorrow in Erie County.
Are they dioceses?
Both of them are diocesan cases.
And the clients there, were they involved in the diocese's compensation program?
So under the diocese compensation program, many of people had to sign a release, so those cases require further legal analysis before understanding whether or not they're actually going to be viable in this look-back window. No. So the first is abuse that happened at St. Francis High School. So that is a diocesan case, but it's also a OFM conventual case.
Okay.
as well. And then the other is from All Saints Church, which at the time All Saints also had a private school that it ran, which is now closed.
Can you have any of the particulars of the church-related ones from the Rochester area, Central Lakes, or Bigger Lakes?
I don't have them at this time. Like I said, I have 1,000 cases, so. The St. Francis case happened in the 70s.
The one at All Saints Church?
The one at All Saints Church was earlier, I believe, the 60s.
Are there any school cases that are going to be filed?
Not tomorrow, not in Erie. We do have school cases that are being filed tomorrow elsewhere.
But will you eventually file any school cases here in Erie County?
I believe so.
Against which districts?
I do not know right now.
That's something we could, same thing for Bigger Lakes, something you have that we could...
Correct. That's information that is all accessible. I just don't have it in front of me. I'd be foolish to even suggest that I have 1,000 cases memorized.
In the two church cases that you file tomorrow, can you talk a little bit, I mean, where you're saying, was it a teacher or a priest?
So for the St. Francis High School case, it was the principal at the time, a Father Marian Tulcic, and then for the All Saints case, it was a priest who was in a position as pastor, involving a student in the rectory, and that was a Father James P. Hayes.
How old were the victims at the time?
The victims were 16 and 15. So St. Francis, I believe he was 16, and for All Saints, I believe she was 15.
The student at the high school?
Correct.
Was it a student living in the dorms or something like that?
For St. Francis, yes.
What? A male at St. Francis and a female at All Saints?
Correct.
What is actually going to happen at the courthouse in Buffalo and in Rochester tomorrow?
At the courthouse in Rochester tomorrow, we're filing one case.
As in?
So Rochester is an e-filing state, so it all happens online. The miracle of modern technology.
And you're able to file 1201, are you doing something like that electronically tomorrow?
Say that again, sorry.
And you can file at 1201.
Correct. We're gonna roll them throughout the day.
Okay.
Just because different jurisdictions require different paperwork, so. There is still a lot of gathering that happens day of.
And I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said about the school cases in the future. There will be, yes.
So
was there a time frame or?
So honestly, the window just opened. Our goal is to keep them rolling as many as we can for as long as we can. So honestly, it depends on when the cases were retained. No, but our school cases are represented. The numbers that we have for schools are both public and private. And right now, out of 1,300 cases, I'd say 400 of them are actually school cases. So school cases are definitely some of our biggest offenders. So it's really interesting because even though they constantly call and they're anxious and it seems like they've been waiting a really long time, that instant anxiety is also filled with a lot of relief. For a lot of people, it wasn't just that they weren't able to bring a case, it's that they had buried it so deep that they weren't even able to talk to loved ones about it. For a lot of people, I get calls that they first told their mother about it, or they first told their husband or their wife about it. And so this is honestly the beginning of a huge period of healing for, honestly, a really large portion of our community. Of course not. I mean, so my background is that I spent a number of years as a special victims prosecutor in the Brooklyn DA's office. And even throughout the course of my career, we have seen an increased recognition of not only what victims go through, but the trauma and what that effect is on their ability to tell their story. So we're becoming more and more sensitive to that as a society, and the result of that is that more and more people are able to effectively tell their story. Historically, we thought that someone who had undergone trauma should be able to talk about it right away. That's our assumption. If someone just suffered something traumatic, they should be able to talk about it right now. And now everything scientifically we know about trauma is that that is not how it works. The brain scars over, it protects itself, it buries things deep, and those things don't resurface often until years pass by. So now that we have an understanding of this, that is why we're seeing changes in legislation that allow for victims to come forward into middle age. Because honestly, imagine how scary it could be to be 30, 40, 50 years old, and all of a sudden remember with such clarity something that happened to you at 5, 10, 11. A lot of people feel like they're losing their minds. They feel like no one's going to listen to them. But from everything we know about trauma, that's more common than rare. So with the Me Too movement, we're starting to really foster a society where people are more comfortable talking about moments in which they're vulnerable and feel powerless. And that's the most important takeaway from all this, is that we need to make sure that conversations regarding times when we've been victimized, times when we've suffered, times when we were in our best selves, times when we were vulnerable, that we're all comfortable to talk about that. And that doesn't just go for women, that goes for men, that goes for fathers, mothers, grandparents. I've had clients who come to me that way into their 40s, they're now having conversations with their fathers who were abused in the same churches that they were abused in the same schools that they were abused in. And the truth of the matter is that that's a huge amount of healing that just one law was able to effectuate.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.